just tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, drama. Later on, the Encore Theater with Lionel Barrymore. But first, the La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars, a syndicated episode from December 5th, 1949, called A Very Unusual Woman.
Thank you. Thank you, and greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. This is C.P. McGregor speaking. Welcome to the La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars, radio's greatest daytime dramatic program. Every day, a complete 30-minute drama from Hollywood. Every day, a famous Hollywood star. Today, our star is Binny Barnes in A Very Unusual Woman. And now the curtain rises on Act One of A Very Unusual Woman, starring Binny Barnes.
Dillies are a most unusual family, headed by mother, Thea Dilly, ably portrayed by Binny Barnes. Since the group is so unusual and so impossible to describe, let's drop into the Dilly living room and observe them in person, all but mother, who hasn't arrived home yet.
Now, who could that be? Oh, well.
Why doesn't someone answer the door? Jerry!
Granny, you open the door. I'm washing my hair.
Helene!
It's no one for me. I already looked.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I have to do everything in this house. Ransom Dilly, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Lying around like a washed-up beachcomber.
Beachcombers are washed up, not out, dear sister.
Oh,
Hello.
I didn't think anybody lived here.
We don't. We just exist. What do you want?
Well, if I must be explicit, your furniture. Are you Mrs. Dilly?
No. I'm Miss Dilly. Look, would you mind saying what you said over again?
It's very simple, Miss Dilly. I represent the firm of Hirsch and Harsh. They're lawyers, and they represent...
Don't tell me. Let me guess.
Our creditors.
Well, that's right. I've come to collect the assorted mortgages they hold, or...
Or you take the furniture?
That, plus the house, the grounds, and other outlying properties.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Dilly, but that's the way it is. Please understand, it isn't anything personal. I just happen to be working my way through college on this job.
Oh, dear. We always seem to be in some kind of trouble. Well, you might as well come in and wait for Mother.
Oh, well, thank you.
Sit down whenever you like. The furniture is yours anyway.
Ouch! Helene, if you're going to play scales, play them correctly.
And anyway, the man's coming for the piano.
What did you say?
This man wants the money or out everything goes.
Where's Mother?
Out. Oh, pardon me. This is my sister, Helene Dilly. I'm Jerry, and this is Ranny.
My name's Bill Howell.
How do you do?
Hiya. Hey, Jerry, why didn't Mother pay these people?
It could be she didn't have any money. I read somewhere there are people like that.
Oh, don't be flippant, Ranny. You know perfectly well there's money. At least there always is the first of the month.
This is the 10th.
No payments have been made for 2 years.
2 years? Oh, my goodness, this is awful.
Well, and Hirsch and Harsh have reached the limit of their patience. You can't blame them.
No. No, I suppose not, only... Oh, I wish Mother would come. Can't we give you something, Mr. Howell? Some tea?
There is no tea. I looked.
Coffee? Oh, no, we're out of that, too.
You don't have to make conversation, you know. I'm here on business. It isn't necessary to entertain me.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude. But I'm terribly upset, and... I just realized. My hair. I haven't finished drying it.
Well, it's beautiful. I like it like that.
Uh-oh, a conquest, Dilly. You'd better take advantage of it.
Well, so long as you're not taking the piano today, I'll go on with my practicing.
Oh, I wish you would take that piano, old boy. It would save the rest of us a lot of headaches.
Children!
Here's Mother now, Mr. Howell.
And Howell, I'm warning you, from now on, anything can happen.
Children! Oh, you look so lovely. Children, I've had the most wonderful afternoon. Oh, what a charming young man. You must ask him to stay to dinner, Jerry.
He came to see you, Mother.
Well, he can still stay for dinner. Oh, but children, I want you to see what I brought home. I found him in the park. Finny! Finny, where are you, Finny?
What did I tell you, Howell?
Yeah. Well, come on in, Finny. I want you to meet everybody, and I do want everybody to meet you.
Yes, ma'am.
Good heavens. Who on earth is that?
Well, his whole name is P. Phineas Pelham.
Yeah, the P stands for Pussy, but the mob always calls me Finney. You guys can call me Finney.
And you know what? Finney can cook.
He can cook.
What did I hear you say, Mother? Who can cook?
You mean really cook?
Yes, isn't that wonderful? Well, as soon as he told me, I said, Finney, you shouldn't live alone. We need you.
Yeah, you know how it is, living alone. You batch around a while.
Yes.
Then you go off your feet.
Do you?
So I took up cooking to take my mind off me stomach.
Oh, and he was head chef at Leavenworth.
Mother, that's a penitentiary.
Well, of course it is, darling. Mother knows that. Why, Finney was sent up 3 times. Weren't you, Finney?
Yeah, but I always get out on good behavior.
Oh.
But what was the use? I only had to go back again.
You did?
After all, a guy has to eat. Nobody give me a job.
Oh.
You know how it is.
Yes, indeed. We know, but as Shakespeare says, sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in his head. Books in the running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in everything.
Bravo, Mother, bravo.
Yes, hey, wasn't that mother. Good? Yes, I think so, too.
Gosh, that's almost like poetry. Oh, that was swell, lady.
Oh, fair.
You sure can reel it off. You know any more?
Why, no any more. My dear man, I was one of America's foremost Shakespearean actresses.
Mother, you must listen to me. Just a moment. Mr. Howell wants to talk to you.
Oh, and I shall adore talking to Mr. Mowell.
Howell, please.
Oh, yes. And we'll talk in a minute. But first I must get Finney some food. Now, let me see. There must be some tea and cakes and whatever there is anyway.
There's nothing.
Nothing?
You want that I should make you a cake?
Say no fooling. You can make a cake?
Sure.
Isn't he wonderful? Oh, dear. I don't know what we've done without him.
Come on, Finney. I'll show you the kitchen.
Yeah, show me the kitchen. Show me the kitchen. Is it all right, ma'am?
Oh, yes. Go right on. And I'll be there in a minute, Finney. Oh, dear. I'm so happy about him. Helen, he's going to stay here and cook for us.
An ex-convict? Live here?
Well, why not? The poor man has to live someplace.
We'll be murdered in our beds, most likely.
Well, it's much nicer to be murdered in our beds than out of them. It's so much more comfortable.
Mother, it won't matter about Finney.
It won't?
Because he won't live here.
Oh, dear.
And you won't live here.
No?
None of us are going to live here. Mr. Howell has come for our house.
Well, good heavens. So early in the afternoon? Why, I wouldn't think of letting him take it now. Everything's so messed up. And besides, dear Finney's using the kitchen.
Mother, you don't understand.
Mrs. Dilly, the mortgage has been foreclosed. Mm-hmm. They're coming tomorrow afternoon to take over the furniture and everything.
Oh, dear. Well, why didn't you say so in the first place? Take a house and furniture? My dear boy, what are we going to do?
Oh, I don't know, Mrs. Dilly.
My good young man, that's what you must think of. Why, you just can't come dashing in and taking everything from under our very noses without making some provision. And, you know, I simply won't go to the Midvale Hotel. It's a grim place. Don't you think it's grim? Well, you really wouldn't know. Well, it is a grim place. That lobby, for instance. Now, you know, when I was studying interior decoration,
Mrs. Dilly,
I had the... Yes?
It's not up to Hirsch and Harsh.
I beg your pardon?
That's the name of the firm he works for.
Oh, is it?
It's not up to them to take care of us. We've got to take care of ourselves. They haven't been paid in 2 years.
Well, really, Jerry, I don't see that that concerns us. Why, that's their affair. Mr. Fowle is the
Howell.
Thing.
And it's our affair, Mother. Very much our affair. We've got to raise that money somehow to pay them, or out we go.
That's right, Mrs. Dilly.
Oh, and you look like such a nice young man. Now, you see, Jerry, let that be a lesson to you. Never trust a good-looking man.
Mrs. Dilly, I hate this as much as you do.
That's a very pretty speech, young man. But it doesn't give us back our house.
Oh, I know,
And another thing. You simply can't take the house till after next Wednesday, because next week is the... Oh, yes, the Boy Scouts week.
Boy Scouts week? Mother... What in heaven's name has that to do with taking our house?
Well, dear, because I felt I should do something about it. I'm really very civic-minded, you know, and I don't ever want it said of me that I don't do my part in the building of our youth.
Yes, but, Mother, what's that to do with Wednesday?
Well, I just dropped into the scout headquarters. Very nice man there. The scoutmaster, you know. He agreed to send one of the Boy Scouts for lunch. Now, let me see, what was his name? Anyway, I forget it. It begins with a T.
Oh, Mother, we can't even feed ourselves, let alone a Boy Scout.
Ah, but we must do our part, dear. You mustn't be selfish. Anyway, I'm sure before they take the house, I'll be given time to think this over.
Well, I hate to remind you, Mrs. Dilly, but you've had 2 years already.
Oh, I never make snap judgments.
Yes, I can see that.
And besides, it wouldn't be fair to you or Hash and Hitch or whatever their silly names are. I'll call you tomorrow, Mr. Trowell.
Howell.
Oh, yes, tomorrow then. And we'll have a nice long talk. Goodbye.
She's some woman, your mother.
Yes, isn't she? Oh, goodness, I don't know what to do. Or what to tell you. I suppose, actually, there's nothing to do. Except come and get our house whenever you're ready.
Maybe I can talk to the bosses. Maybe there's some way you could make the payments.
None of us earn any money. We don't know how. We only know how to spend it. We get an income, you see, a small income. But that's gone almost as soon as we get it. Oh, you've been very nice. And I'm afraid you must think us pretty incompetent and silly.
A little screwball, maybe.
A little? That's a masterpiece of understatement.
But I like you. I like to come back and see you. Oh. I mean, when I'm not on business.
Jerry!
Yes, Mother?
Tell Mr. Howell not to slam the door on his way out. Finney's cape will fall. Oh, and don't you go falling for Mr. Howell.
Oh, Mother.
It's all right, really. Besides, she finally got my name right.
Oh. Troubles surround the Dilly family. But for the moment, they have forgotten the young man who is going to foreclose on their home. They are enjoying the cake baked by their new chef, Finney, late of Leavenworth.
Boy, what a cake.
Oh, gee, folks. I'm sure glad you like it.
It's grand, Finney.
Oh, and we'll live like this from now on. Cakes, pies, everything. Finney says he can cook everything.
Yes, ma'am. At Leavenworth, I cook for 3,000. And 3 meals a day, too.
3,000 cakes. Think of that. Finney, I've got an idea. Children, it's the most wonderful idea.
Mother, please now, no more ideas.
But this is an idea that will save our house and furniture and everything. We'll open an inn, the Dilly Inn.
How vulgar.
Now, anything that makes money is not vulgar. If Finney can cook for 3,000 people, why not 50?
Say, wait a minute. Maybe she's got something there.
But imagine us running an inn.
Helen. Now, Wednesday, let me see. We'll have Mr. Howell bring his two funny little men over Critch and Cratch, and we'll surprise them by proving that we can serve a perfectly wonderful luncheon. Then they'll tear up that little piece of paper, whatever it is, the contract. And when they have to tear it up, then they can't take your house away, and they'll let us stay on. Sounds wonderful.
Mother, you do have something there.
And I'll be the hostess. I've got a lovely tea gown that will be just right. Jerry can be the cashier. And, Annie can wait at table. And Helene, oh dear, what can Helene do?
Well, she can play the piano during mealtimes, but not scales.
Mother, for once in your life, I really think you've got a paying idea.
Well, of course I have, dear. If I do say it myself, your mother is a very clever woman. Now, let me see. Oh, dear, dear. I wonder where we should seat Mr. Hitch. Mr. Hurst, oh, dear. Rennie!
Lunch smells wonderful.
Rennie, dear, where shall I put him?
Where should you put who?
You know, that dreadful man whose name begins with an H. The one who's coming for the house.
Oh, well, the house is practically his. Put him at the head of the table.
Oh, perfect, Rennie. A perfect idea.
By the way, what became of my black silk dressing robe?
Oh, the robe. Oh, yes. Well, I gave it to Mercutio for a cloak.
Mercutio? I never heard of him.
Now, Rennie, dear, don't be so tiresome. He's a perfectly marvelous character. He lived in Elizabethan times and had a violent temper. And he was run through with a sword. But he died beautifully. You don't mind, do you?
Dying beautifully?
No, dear, no. Loaning the robe. We're doing Romeo and Juliet at my dramatic class. And I think costumes help such a lot.
Yes, Mother. But you haven't got enough places at the table, have you?
Oh, haven't I? Well, I thought I had. Now, let me count. One, two. Oh, the Boy Scout.
Boy Scout?
Yes, remember, this is Boy Scout week. I'm sure Boy Scouts were always so hungry. I invited one to lunch. Mm-hmm. Only I still can't remember his name. It begins with, it's on the tip of my tongue, two tongue, tip, tip. Mm-hmm. Oh, T, yes, that's mm-hmm. it. And he must be a very fat boy because the scoutmaster said it would take a lot of food.
Well, I guess Finny can take care of that, all right.
And I must find Helene. She's to play.
Well, she only knows one piece, the happy farmer.
Oh, but darling, that's lovely with lunch. I always consider Schumann an excellent aid to digestion. I must tell Helene to play it for us. Good heavens, there they are now. Oh, dear, I didn't know it was so late. Jerry!
Yes, Mother?
Answer the door, dear.
All right, Mother.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Miss Dilly. Miss Dilly, this is Mr. Hirsch, the head of the firm. Mr. Hirsch couldn't get away.
Now, never mind all that. I'm in a hurry. Just want to look things over, miss. See what condition furniture's in. Cigarette burn, just as I thought. Now, look here, Howell.
But, sir,
and a cane seat that needs mending. Oh, and a wine stain. Why, that's disgraceful. Totally irresponsible people, that's plain to see.
But every house, sir, has minor accidents now and then.
Yes, but they're repaired, immediately repaired. A stitch in time saves nine. A valuable adage to remember, my boy,
hey,
valuable.
Dilly, I gotta see you. Them jerks down at the market forgot the most important thing. Whenever they forget those little bunches of parsley, it drives me crazy.
Why, who's this creature? And stop waving that knife.
Who, me? If I was to see that butcher, I'd use this knife. Anytime a guy that forgets to send that parsley, I'll cut his throat.
Finney, Finney, please go back into the kitchen.
Well, all right, ma'am.
How do you do, gentlemen? That was Finney. You mustn't mind him. He's just out of Leavenworth.
Leavenworth? A murderer? Why, this is a plot.
Oh, no. Finney's really never killed anyone except accidentally. And you'll forgive him even that after you've had lunch.
Lunch? Who said anything about lunch?
Oh, didn't you know? Why, that's what you're here for. Dear, why don't people tell people things?
I never eat lunch. My liver, you know.
Oh, good. Did you bring it with you? Well, we'll cook a few onions and get together with that.
Onions.
And we have a nice Boy Scout coming for lunch. You see, this is Boy Scout week. You know, I told the scoutmaster that the members of your firm were sort of, acting as host to him.
Really?
And since this is your furniture and your house and... in a manner of speaking, your food, it certainly makes you host.
Well, I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, then everything's settled and you'll stay?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, of course you will. Oh, you're such a dear and how lovely of you. Just put your briefcase over there and make yourself at home.
All right.
Hey, Mrs. Dilly, I gotta see you right away.
Oh, excuse me. I won't be a minute and then we'll have lunch. Heavens, what's that? Must be an earthquake. Now, everybody, keep your heads. Don't stand under any fallen bricks. Get your first aid kit.
What are all those kids doing in the yard?
Well, I don't know. It must be Mr. I or Mr. T, whatever his name is. He must have brought some of his friends.
Friends? He's brought a whole troop.
A troop? Troop. Oh, of course, that was his name. How wonderful of you to think of it, you nice young man. You.
T, that's it, troop. Ye gods, no wonder the scoutmaster was worried about food. You didn't invite one scout, Mother dear. You ask a whole troop of them.
Scoutmaster Holt and troop reporting for lunch, ma'am.
Well, how very nice to see you. That is, all of you. Now, you must meet my family. This is my daughter, Jerry. Of course, her name is Geraldine, but no one ever calls her by that. Geraldine, say hello to the scoutmaster troop, dear, will you?
The name is Holt, Miss Dilly.
Who is it?
Yes. Glad to know you, Mr. Holt.
And my daughter, Helene.
How do you do?
Well, I'm glad to know you, Miss Dilly.
And Ranny, my son. That's short for Ransom.
How do you do?
And Mr. Howell, this is this charming, charming gentleman who has so delightfully offered to act as your host, Mr. Hooch of Hooch and Hitch.
Oh, no correction, please. The names are Hirsch and Harsh. I'm Harsh. I'm Hirsch.
Oh, well, what's in a name? A rose by any other name would smell. Now, everybody just relax. Dally as you will at Dilly Inn. Mm-hmm. Oh, say that's not bad. It's a good motto. I'll make a note of that. Take over, Jerry, dear. I must away to the kitchen.
Oh, Mother, you can't leave me like this.
Darling, Helen will play for you. Play Schumann for them, dear. Play anything.
Oh, what can we do with them?
Your mother's right. Get your sister to play.
Schumann?
No, anything but that. Look, I'll Come on, Randy. How about a little badminton with the boys? There's a court out in back, isn't there?
Badminton. Oh, no.
What can you do, Finney? If we don't feed everybody, we'll be the laughingstock of the town. You've got to do something. Now, look, you fed 3,000 men at Leavenworth. You've only got to feed 20 here at Dilly Inn.
Well, there's only one thing stopping me, ma'am, to grub. All I need is a victory garden and a Texas steer.
Wait. Oh, why didn't I think of it before?
Think of what? You already taught her plenty.
Hish and wish. Meat and vegetables. It's a store and they own it.
I'm catching on.
Don't you see? They're the host. They should give something, don't you think? Why not the food? Now, look, Finney, call their store and tell them to send out what you want at once and charge it to...
Never mind, ma'am. I know who you mean.
Well, goodness, those boys really must be hungry. Nice little things, aren't they? How they fall into that food. Ever see anything like it? Big fat thing there. Oh, dear. Anything more? Now, I'm sure Finney has plenty.
Sure swell, Mrs. Daly, and thank you. And thank you, Mr. Hirsch. And give our thanks to Mr. Hirsch, too.
Oh, he got through it right. Both our names. Ed, wonderful troop, wonderful boys. Why, such leadership. What citizens these boys will grow up to be. Hirsch and Hirsch are proud to be your hosts. And as for our lovely hostess...
Oh, yes, and those papers, Mr...
Oh, forget it, Mrs. Dilly, forget it. From now on, we're really partners. It's Dilly Inn. Any woman who could cook for a whole troop of unexpected guests and show them a good time can do anything.
Hooray for Mrs. Dilly.
Oh, how sweet you all are. How very sweet.
You know, Mother, once in a while you do have an idea that really works.
Well, of course, dear. If I do say it myself, I think your mother is a very clever woman.
I want to say this, Mrs. Dilly. Mm-hmm. This has been one of the pleasantest days in my life.
Oh.
And if this has run you into any extra expense, just charge it to me.
Dear, dear, dear Mr. Hoosh, how sweet of you to think of it. Because I already have.
And so the curtain falls on Act Two of A Very Unusual Woman, starring Benny Barnes. Benny, a friend of mine was telling me he caught your act long before you became such a success in motion pictures.
You don't happen to be referring to the early trials and tribulations of Texas Benny.
Texas Benny?
Well, that's what she was known as in them days, partner. Texas Benny, a rootin' tootin' rope-spinning gal right off the range. Sort of a poor man's pistol-packing mama, you know.
And where did you do this act, Benny?
On the stage in Australia.
How did the act fare?
Mm-hmm. Well, it went along pretty good for a time, but then...
Then?
Came the death of vaudeville. Of course, it was a startling coincidence, but I still like to think that in spite of my act, vaudeville died a natural death.
That was just a period of transition, for vaudeville has now come back and it's all the rage again. Well, Benny, and ladies and gentlemen, I hope that all of you will be with us tomorrow for a dramatic love story titled The Message. Miriam Hopkins will star, and I know you'll enjoy it. Until tomorrow, then, thanks for listening, and cheerio from Hollywood.
The La Rosa Hollywood Theater of Stars, untuned to yesterday, a December 5th, 1949 syndicated recording. You are listening to an hour of drama, untuned to yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now an adaptation of the story A Man to Remember, which was first seen on the silver screen in 1938 with Edward Ellis, starring as Dr. John Abbott. Lionel Barrymore assumes that role on radio next in the CBS broadcast of the Encore Theater from August 6th, 1946.
The Shenley Laboratories, producer of penicillin Shenley and Shenley Pharmaceuticals, presents the Encore Theater. The Encore Theater play tonight, A Man to Remember. Our star, is Mr. Lionel Barrymore. Tonight, Shenley Laboratories presents another in a new series of great dramatic programs. Some of our stories are fact, the struggles and accomplishments of great men of medicine. Others are fiction, stories of devotion to an ideal, individual heroism, or great courage. By these programs, Shenley Laboratories would remind you that medical science and progress are not cold, impersonal research or pages of statistics, but a warm human story told in living terms. Whether it's the life of one of medicine's immortals or the everyday record of service rendered by your family physician. And now, A Man to Remember, starring Mr. Lionel Barrymore. The doctor was dead. The funeral was over. It had been an impressive afternoon. The town band had walked before the funeral coach, and the people of the town had thronged the sidewalks to pay their last respects. The doctor was dead. The earth was in place, and the stone, and the words that honored him. And before the afternoon sun had set, the vultures had gathered in his lawyer's office. George Sykes, the banker. Homer Ramsey, owner of the local department store. Jode Harkness, president of the school board.
Sit down, gentlemen. I've brought Dr. Abbott's strongbox with me. I find that in most cases of this nature, the creditors prefer to wait until, well, the day after the benediction has been delivered.
Now, looky here, Clyde. That ain't fair. The doc would want us to have our money. I hold Doc Abbott's personal note for $600 plus 100 interest.
How about you, Homer?
I had the bookkeeper figure up his account today. He owes the store $726.37. He hasn't paid a bill since 1928.
And you, Jode?
He owes me $1,100.
His son gave this box to me this morning when I explained how eager you were to get his father's affairs in shape. Gentlemen, here is the estate.
The estate?
That's right. A black signet ring, an ashtray, and some papers. Suppose we take the papers one by one. This one is headed Westport First National Bank. It reads, 60 days after date, or on demand, I promise to pay to George Sykes and, or, the Westport First National Bank, the sum of $300 with accumulated interest at 7%. Signed, John Abbott. Dated, June 16, 1919.
That's the date, all right. He walked into my office with Dick. Dick was, about eight then. Two of them looked about as poor as church mice.
Well, if it ain't John Abbott.
Yep. How are you, Joe?
I'm fine, fine. Sit down. How are you? It's been a long while.
Yeah, pretty near 25 years.
That's right. You left for college right after we graduated from high school, didn't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you were voted the boy most likely to succeed, weren't you?
Yeah. It seems kind of funny now, doesn't it?
It sure does. Aiming to stay here for a while?
Well, as long as I can be useful to the community, George.
Well, I don't know. We got some doctors here already.
Well, I thought there might be enough room for one more.
Might be at that. A lot of poor folks on the other side of town build up quite a little factory section over there. A lot of them folks need doctoring.
Well, I guess I'll stay then. I need a little eating money, though.
How much?
About $300.
That's a whale of a lot of money, John.
Well, I aim to do a whale of a lot of eating in this town.
Yeah. What have you got to offer as security?
17 years' experience as a practicing physician.
Yeah, you know what we say about horses, John. Hmm? There's horses, and then again, there's horses. Yeah. I always say that about doctors, too.
Well, I've done pretty well.
You're broke, ain't you?
I meant about keeping my patients alive. That's my business, you know.
All right, John. I'm going to make out a note for $300, and I'll give you $250. Got to have a little bonus, you know, when there isn't any security. But I always like to help an old friend.
Do you help out many of your old friends this way, George?
Sign on this line.
They should have elected you the boy most likely to succeed.
It sure was a long time ago.
Here's the second paper. It's a bill, one of Dr. Abbott's statements. It's made out to Howard Johnson. It reads, June 17th, 1919, delivery of child, $25. Beneath it is the notation, Johnson has no money.
Well, Doc,
you have a fine baby girl, Johnson.
Girl.
And a healthy one, too.
Girls ain't no good on a farm. I wanted a boy. I wanted somebody who could help me work this land when I get old. Girls are for people who can afford them. How's my wife?
Johnson, I did everything I could. I'm afraid she wasn't in very good condition to begin with, and... Well, I did everything I could. I know how you feel. I lost my wife that way.
She never had nothing while she lived. Bad crops, bad times. We was going to have a good crop this season. I was going to buy her something.
Yeah. Now keep the baby warm. And
You get out of here. Get out of here. Don't ever come back.
But man, you want to know how to take care of the baby.
I told you to get. Get, I said, get.
Boy, that was some shiner, Pop.
It is a beaut, isn't it?
What's that?
Sounds like a baby crying.
It's outside.
Come on.
It is a baby. Look. In that box.
Well, I'll be... Come on, let's get her inside right away.
Here's a note.
Let me have it, son. Dear Doc, I'm sorry I hit you. Give the kid to somebody who'll be good to us. Johnson.
She sure is little, isn't she?
Eh? Well, son, it looks as though you got a baby sister.
I'd forgotten Jean wasn't his own child.
What's the next paper?
This is a bill to Dr. Abbott. It's from you, Homer. See? Homer Ramsey, General Merchandise. June 17th, 1923, to Dr. Abbott account, one baby doll, $12. Please remit.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jeannie. Happy birthday to you.
Now, take a big breath and blow the candles out, honey. Hey, that's wonderful. All four at once. That means you're going to get your wish. Now then, what did you wish for?
A dolly.
A dolly? Mm-hmm. Well. Now, suppose you go and look in your bedroom and see what you find. You go with us, son. Turn the lights on.
Yes, sir. Come on, Jean.
Hello? Yep. Who? Oh, Homer Ramsey. What's the matter? Oh, I see. Doc Robinson's out of town. All right, I'll be right over. Doctors have the doggonest time trying to give parties.
Is she, Doc?
Well, Homer, your wife has acute appendicitis. I'm going to have to operate right away.
How much are you going to charge me for this operation?
I understand. Are you by any chance interested in how your wife is doing?
Well, I certainly am, Doc. But I don't want any of this funny stuff about the price of the operation. I want a fair price. But I don't want to be stuck, you understand?
I understand. Are you interested by any chance in how your wife's doing?
How is she?
Well, she's very low. Hello, Homer.
Doc. What can I do for you?
I have the bill here with me for your wife's operation.
$100? That's right, John?
That's right, Homer.
How much of your time did the operation take?
About 4 hours, I calculate.
Pretty good money for 4 hours' work. Well, look here, John. Let's get down to the facts. I don't mind paying a just fee, but $100 for 4 hours, that's pretty steep.
You really mean that, don't you, Homer?
You bet I do.
Mm-hmm. What do you pay your janitor around here?
Oh, 40 cents an hour.
Yeah, you see, I made a mistake in figuring the bill, Homer.
Well, that's more like it.
Yep, yep. The only place we differ is the value each of us puts on your wife. I was a mite too high. So I'll settle right now for 40 cents an hour. $1.60 cash.
Now, John, I didn't mean that. Perfectly willing to pay a fair price.
Give me $1.60.
But I feel ashamed to settle for that, John. Really, now you know...
Give me the money.
Yeah, sure.
I'll just fix the bill. To Homer Ramsey, account appendicitis operation, Mrs. Ramsey, $100. Settled for $1.60 cash. You got a bargain at that, Homer. You'd have had to pay a gravedigger for 6 hours.
Doctor was dead, and the afternoon sun was still haloing the freshly turned earth. The doctor was dead, and in his lawyer's office sat his creditors, the banker, the merchant, the president of the school board.
What's that next paper there, Lawyer Perkins? Anything of value?
Not to you, Jode. It's the announcement of Richard's graduation from Curtis University. We all remember how proud Doc Abbott was that day. Richard was valedictorian of his class.
Yes, it was 1934. Right after graduation, Dick went to the New York Medical Center for postgraduate work. What's that paper there? The bill?
October 8th, 1936, to Paul Lubinowski, deceased.
Paul Lubinowski?
You remember Paul Lubinowski, don't you, Joe? Of course you do. The doc mentioned him when he was arguing with you about building a hospital. As a matter of fact, all of you were there. Homer, George, as well as Jode. It was a board of supervisors meeting.
Last week, this board of supervisors appropriated $18,000 to fight hog cholera. I've always worked on the theory that a man is more valuable than a hog.
Now, that ain't fair, Doc, and you know it. Hogs are a big industry around here.
Well, so are people. You figure that a dead hog represents $20 loss and a dead man caused nothing. Isn't it as much your business to take care of human beings as it is to take care of hogs?
As far as I'm concerned, the whole scheme is ridiculous.
Our budget won't stand it.
The whole thing's impractical.
All right, gentlemen. All right, all right. Sorry I can't spend some more time with you, but I got work to do. There's a fellow on the other side of town named Lubinowski. He's a foreman at the flour mill. They tell me his crew puts out more flour than any outfit in the mill. He's a good man. Mm-hmm. Almost as good as a hog. Yesterday, he got his arm caught in the mill. I had to amputate. I couldn't move him because I had no hospital to move him to. No ambulance if there had been a hospital. Now, I don't think Paul Lubinowski can pull through. Now, you take care of the hogs. I'll take care of the people.
Dad! Dad, where are you?
Dr. Abbott!
What's happened? What's the matter?
It's my arm.
It was my fault, sir. I was showing her my gun. It was an accident.
Come in the other room quickly. Come on. Come on, Howard. I'll need you too. How does that feel, honey?
Fine. You're a good doctor.
Well, at least I'm the best one handy. It's not very serious, Howard. May leave a small scar, but that's about all.
I'm awfully sorry, sir, and I know there isn't anything to be said for me, but I'll do anything I can to make it right.
You mean that, Howard?
Oh, I certainly do.
Well, I got a little plan in mind.
Anything. I'll do anything.
Relax, son. Relax. It isn't that drastic. Now, my plan is this. Your father loves you, doesn't he?
Why, yes.
And you're sorry for what you've done. So sorry that you'll make your father show how much he loves you.
Yes, sir.
Howard, Jean may have needed surgery tonight. X-rays, transfusion. And time might have been very important. You wouldn't have been a very happy boy, Howard, if Jean...
Doctor,
had...
I didn't know. I didn't realize.
No. This near tragic little accident may be a blessing in disguise, Howard. I want you to go to your father. Tell him a man as big as he is should engrave his name in the history of this town. He should leave something big for the town and for himself.
Like what?
Like the George Sykes Memorial Hospital.
That was a fine gesture you made, George, building that hospital.
Well, I probably would have done it anyhow.
I must admit it's come in handy.
It was rather small of you, though, I think, restricting Dr. Abbott to the charity ward.
Well, the charity cases were always his pets anyway. Let's get on with the box.
This is a bill, a statement sent September 21st, 1937, to Mrs. Walter Lamb, account Sally Lamb, $6.
Oh, I remember that.
I think we all remember that.
Now, keep Sally in the house, Mrs. Lamb, and don't under any circumstances let any children come in. I'll write out exactly what I want you to do. Of course, you'll be quarantined, but I'll be back this afternoon.
Do you think it's anything serious, Doctor?
Yes, I think it's typhoid fever. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm sorry to have to interrupt a board of the supervisors again, but what I have to say today won't take very much time. You're having a county fair in 2 weeks, and I've come here to ask you to cancel it.
Cancel it? Are you crazy?
What for?
Unless my diagnoses are completely wrong, we're in for an epidemic of typhoid fever.
What gives you that idea, Doc?
I have 4 patients who have all the symptoms.
Well, quarantine them. 4 people out of a town of 4,000 don't strike me as being an epidemic.
4 cases of typhoid, gentlemen, are quite enough to start preventive measures so there won't be an epidemic.
The merchants of this town have put up $12,000 for the county fair. You suggesting that we throw that money up the flue just because 4 of your patients might have typhoid?
All right. You leave me no other course than to go to the newspaper. I'm going to warn this town whether it costs our merchants $12,000 or not.
Newspapers won't print nothing we tell it not to, Doctor.
How much is your son worth to you, Joe?
That's not a fair question.
You're willing to risk him for $12,000?
Oh, he won't get it, will he? Typhoid fever?
He might. He can. Only don't worry, Joe. I'm going to see that he doesn't get it. I hope all you gentlemen sleep well tonight.
The boys are all waiting on the front porch, Dad. I have 10 of them.
Good. Give them each a pile of handbills. Tell them I want one in every house in town and all along Main Street.
Here, let me see one. Warning, typhoid fever. Do not attend the county fair. Boil every drop of water you drink. I am making a house-to-house canvass to assure that everyone is examined. I will give each of you medical advice on purification of water and provide chlorinated tablets for those who have their own water supply. If I do not get to your house, come to me in the evenings. John Abbott, M.D.
Oh, Dr. Abbott, I'm so glad you came. The children are all inside, and I've talked to every mother in the block. They brought their youngsters over here to save you time.
Fine. Now let's get to work.
There's the doctor now.
You
weren't home today, Doctor, so we came here to your house.
I haven't got any money, Doc, but I'll pay you payday.
Good evening, folks. Now, if you'll line up one by one, we'll take care of you in the living room.
Dad, the city council is all stirred up about us. They say you've alarmed the whole community and ruined the fair. I'm afraid we're in trouble again.
Probably. Jean, I'm tired. I never felt it before, but... well, I'm an old man.
You've heard the charges, Dr. Abbott. There's nothing personal in them. The county fair and the reputation of us all has been put in jeopardy by what we must consider an unwarranted action on your part. Have you any defense to offer?
No defense.
Then I have no course but to put this matter into the record.
Do. Meanwhile, I think I'd better go home.
I'm sorry to be late, gentlemen. I've been very busy. We have 6 cases of typhoid fever in Wellington.
I shall assume we shall disregard all action taken in this meeting. Do I hear a motion that a committee be appointed to appear before the Board of Supervisors and insist upon cancellation of the county fair?
I make such a motion.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Forty-two cases in Wellington. 23 cases in Palmdale. 68 cases in Wellington. 39 cases in Palmdale. 4 cases in Westport. But no new cases reported there since the beginning of the epidemic. Well, that's the report, gentlemen. I, for one, think we owe Dr. Abbott a mighty big debt of gratitude.
Daddy, there are some people to see you.
People? Well, send them in.
I think maybe you'd better come out on the front porch. The minister's there, and, well, there's quite a mob of them.
Huh? Oh, well, all right.
Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Reverend. Oh, good evening, all.
Doctor, you've been among us for a long time, and you've worked hard. You never made much money, I guess, because the people you worked for didn't have much. But you didn't care. You just kept right on working. Maybe a lot of us have been ungrateful. Maybe you think we've forgotten, but we haven't. I have here a letter. It's a letter of thanks for all you've done. It's got 4,000 signatures, Doctor. Almost every man, woman, and child in this town. It's just to let you know that we love you.
Dr. Abbott?
Yes, Dr. Robinson?
In my mind, and in the minds of my colleagues of the County Medical Association, you perform the most outstanding service in the history of our community. You have taught us all something, not only about medicine, but about humanity. The Westport County Medical Association has delegated me to inform you that if you will honor us with your presence, you have in advance been elected president by acclamation.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, Dad. I'm mighty proud of you.
Dick? Well, when did you get back, son?
Got in on the afternoon train. I wanted to surprise you. I was just in time to hear the speeches.
It's so good to see you. Well, I'm certainly having an exciting day.
That shingle out there is too small, you know. You'll have to get a bigger one.
Bigger one?
That's right. There's another name going under yours. Dr. John Abbott. And Dr. Richard Abbott.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll have a sign painted the first thing in the morning. I've waited a long time for that.
Kind of a shame he had to die just when he was getting little recognition.
His heart was worn out, and so was he. He gave until he didn't have an ounce of strength left to give.
What's in the envelope on the bottom?
The money for his debts. According to his calculations, he owed the three of you $2,426.37. Do you think he did?
Why,
Why don't we give the money to the charity ward at the hospital?
Give it?
I kind of agree with you, George. Those debts should have been written off a long time ago.
I guess you're right. He was a fine man. We might not have always seen eye to eye.
Leastways, not until he swung us around to his way of thinking by one means or another.
But he was a fine man.
I agree with you. Dr. Abbott was a man to remember.
And now the star of tonight's play, Mr. Lionel Barrymore.
Ladies and gentlemen, to sum up the spirit of this Shenley Laboratory program, this simple and beautiful prayer of the physician, written centuries ago by Maimonides, seems to me to be apt and fitting. The eternal providence has appointed me to watch over the life and death of all thy creatures. May I always see in the patient a fellow creature in pain. Grant me strength, an opportunity always to extend the domain of my craft. Now, this is the prayer of the physician. It's ages old, yet today it's as new as the hope for a peaceful way of life for all the world. May we invite you to listen again next week at this same time when Shenley Laboratories presents The Prisoner of Shark Island, starring Zachary Scott, a great star in a great story. Good night.
A Man to Remember was produced and directed by Bill Lawrence and was presented through the courtesy of RKO Radio Pictures, producers of Till the End of Time, starring Dorothy McGuire and Guy Madison. It was a Gene Holloway adaptation. This is Frank Graham speaking for Shenley Laboratories. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Encore Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, from the 6th of August, 1946, on CBS. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of drama, on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.